Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:14 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is July 26th, and it's certainly been an eventful summer so far, and today was certainly no exception. So we had a significant decline on the Hang Seng, and it was in direct response to the decision over the weekend to follow through on the threat to the tutoring sector that they would now have to become non-profits. In other words, basically their shares are now worthless, because when one thinks about the whole motivation for buying those shares in the first place was that they were highly profitable, that they had growth because of the constant demand for people to try and improve the lot of their children, to get into better universities, and that they would continue to be able to increase dividends and improve cash flows. So dividends are certainly no longer going to be possible, and there's the real potential that this type of action towards companies is going to be more widespread. One of the things that people in China have been most acutely aware of are the similarities between what is going on right now and what happened ahead of the Cultural Revolution. And the Cultural Revolution and that whole mess about a great leap forward and it resulting in a great leap backwards, that's what people are terrified of. And they're really wondering about what they can do about it, which isn't an awful lot. So there's no capacity for protests to arise as a result of the security measures that were imposed in Hong Kong during the pandemic. And it does raise an important question for investors. When we think about what's happening to the China equity sector overall, it comes down to governance. And the basis for governance is an independent, or at least respect for minority shareholder rights. China doesn't have them. Doesn't have an independent judiciary or a free press either. Doesn't have any of the conditions that would support a long-term investment. The volatility in policy is something that needs to be really considered here, because that's something that the USA was accused of during the Trump administration, that there was a lot of volatility in policy, but at no point did that affect the financial markets. Whereas what we see in China is that there is less volatility in government policy, but because the market is not a priority of the government, there's a great deal of volatility in how they approach markets, because they are communists, and a market economy is antithetical to the Communist Manifesto. So therefore, this dalliance with markets doesn't tend to stand up to scrutiny when one's basis for comparison is the Communist Manifesto. So one might think, well, the only way to invest in that case is along the same lines as the Communist Party themselves. They invest heavily in new technologies that they don't have yet. And as long as those new technologies don't represent a threat to single-party rule, they'll be tolerated. So China has clearly demonstrated what they want to do well, and that is semiconductors. And they're willing to plow whatever money is required into it. So that is what might be considered a sanctioned way to invest. Making money off of tutoring is no longer something that will be tolerated. The search engines and the quantity of data that they take in, like Baidu, well, that's been trending downwards now for a while. The significant sway that big companies like Tencent with its gaming platform, which attracts the attention of large numbers of young people, and of course then also becomes a forum, that's also under scrutiny, and the share continues to trend downwards. Alibaba, with its massive network of a payments network on the one hand and then retail network on the other, it's also now under a great deal of scrutiny. So we're seeing a significant change here and a real backward step in terms of free markets. So that is also indicative of what China does. They've been talking a good game about free markets and giving a greater role to markets in the setting of the currency's value. But what we are now seeing is a very different environment. The renminbi has also stopped appreciating, and it was a little bit softer in here today. One thing that I think is particularly relevant is that the MSCI Emerging Markets Index broke downwards. And when we look at the constituents of that index, well, the largest constituent is Taiwan Semiconductor, and that share peaked in January. Then it's Alibaba and Tencent. And Samsung Electronics is another significant semiconductor producer and consumer electronics company. And then you've got Meituan, which is a social venue, or I guess it really is a social media company. And that's also pulled back in a significant fashion in here today as well. So this is I think, additional reason for caution in the Asian region, particularly because China casts a long shadow. So even when we think about emerging markets ex-China, it's really outperformed by a significant margin over the course of the last few months. But that doesn't mean it's not susceptible to additional weakness. And the trend is still certainly in an upward trend overall, and it's now right in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range, and it's unwound about half of its overextension relative to the trend mean. But if the MSCI Emerging Markets continues lower, well, because there are such large quantities of investors simply invest on an index basis, and they're not looking for differentiation. They just want to tick the box that they're invested in emerging markets. Well, that money will start to come out, and that will create buying opportunities. There's absolutely no doubt of that. When we think about India, well, it's likely to be one of the primary beneficiaries of any kind of migration away from China, and looking for another high-growth, high-population market. And the index there has been pausing now for the last while, and that's in US dollar terms, but still pausing around the 16,000 point level in nominal terms. When we then think about what else is affecting the emerging markets, well, a lot of it has to do with the Delta variant, and we've had a lot of data coming out recently. Some from Singapore and Israel is particularly worrisome, because there is the real possibility that people who have been inoculated against the original virus can be infected with the Delta variant. They may even become symptomatic, and they might even mistake it for a sniffle or a cold, and then pass it on to other people. And of course, that represents a significant challenge then for the unvaccinated. And particularly when people have been vaccinated, well, I've witnessed more than one occasion people saying, "Oh, don't worry about it, I've been vaccinated." So people behave as if they're immune. But the reality is that we tend to be partially immune. So we're granted some form of immunity from the COVID vaccine, the COVID virus. It pretty much ensures that people will be less liable to be very ill or end up in hospital, but it does not prevent infection, and it means that the effects of the virus will be mitigated, but the transmissibility of it might increase. And that's obviously a public policy challenge. We've had a lot of social unrest and rowdy protests, whether that's in Australia or in the UK or in parts of the USA, it's pretty much been a global phenomenon. Just over the last weekend, there have been a lot of protests, particularly also in Europe, and protesting about mask mandates and social distancing and the slow pace of opening up, because promises were made, and whether they were factual or not, the understanding of most people was that once vaccines were made available, then the economy would open back up. So that's a challenge, because politicians are not going to be able to walk that back, and it pretty much suggests that instead they're going to double down on masks, and they're going to encourage companies and particularly public sector workers that they will have to be inoculated, and then if they don't do that, they might be forced to take tests every few days or once a week. So that is the direction that we're of travel. And the inconvenience of being tested repeatedly is something that would encourage many people to just get inoculated. And most particularly, if it can be demonstrated as time goes by that these vaccines are safe. We just simply do not have enough of back history, because they've only been in existence for a year, to really confirm the, or to, I guess, dissuade the people who are concerned about the long-term effects of these viruses, of these vaccines. That's simply going to take time. With all of these emerging worries, well, it's going to be pretty difficult for governments to normalize fiscal policy or central bankers to normalize monetary policy. So the stock market was in positive territory in here today on Wall Street, and that was equally true of the Nasdaq and the Dow Jones. And European markets were mixed too, but again, not in an especially dynamic manner. What I think was interesting in here today is Mexico's performance, because with China, I think, and the conflict, and whether that is the trade conflict or the war of words with China escalates, the relative attraction of places like Mexico and Vietnam is only going to be bolstered. So the Mexican stock market is now right in the region of its peak from back in 2017. But I think perhaps more important than that is when we look at it in US dollar terms, well, it looks increasingly likely that it has broken the downtrend. So the price is now firming from the 2500 level, and this does look like something that can move higher from here. It's not just either about resources. When we think about the outlook for the consumer and streaming services, well, Televisa looks like it is forming a first step above its base. But it is certainly getting some tailwind from the industrial resources prices. So the copper price was up in a dynamic manner again in here today, and this has looked like a consolidation in the region of the peak, and it is now looking like it is going to continue to firm from here. So this has looked like a secular bull market, and I think that that will be borne out over subsequent years. There is a strong additional source of new demand for copper, and there is a clear intention by policymakers to remake their economies, their determination not to allow a good crisis to go to waste, and that particularly for both Europe and China, they want to become energy independent. That was never a national priority when the USA was not energy independent. Now that it is, everyone wants to be. So they're going to invest in additional sources of energy that they do not have to depend on imports. But nonetheless, we're still in an environment where the global economy is still recovering. There's still a lot of money floating around, and that is also helping to support the oil price. So we now have a higher reaction low and support in the region of the upper side of that underlying trading range. In fact, it's a failed break below $70. So it's looking increasingly likely now that we will push up and test that $80 area. It's also looking likely that we may see some additional cold weather coming into the Sao Paulo region. So the Arabica coffee price rebounded reasonably impressively in here today, wasn't quite able to hold on to all of its advance. We've definitely, though, seen that agricultural prices are rising. We're seeing that with this continued threat from the virus, then the quantity of money likely to be printed will be rather high. Gold prices were negative in here today, still trading in the region of this $1,800 area. It really does need to push up and out of this range in order to confirm the higher reaction low. But so far, we've had pretty inert trading over the course of the last week. Then when we think about the platinum price, it was up approximately $6 today and trying its best, I think, to put in its own higher reaction low and also holding this $1,000 area. And as long as it's doing that, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the breakout. Of course, platinum needs a significant bullish catalyst. It may have found it in hydrogen because its use or of its use in the hydrogen fuel cells, but it's going to have to do better than this in order to confirm that we're back in a significant medium-term bull market. Certainly, there's a lot of social unrest around the world, and there's a lot of uncertainty about exactly what's going on in China. And this economic decoupling and forcing people to make a decision about whether they are willing to simply keep their mouths shut and engage with China and try to make some money there, or speak their mind and kiss away the opportunity of ever making money there, then that's really the decision that's in front of lots of companies. And the reality is that the majority of companies will choose to make money rather than speak their minds because they have the profit motivation. And ultimately, that is unlikely to be a fruitful exercise, but it will last for as long as we don't get a critical event occur. But the likelihood of a critical event, which would spark a full decoupling, well, that is something that is a rising possibility because China wants to settle the Taiwan question. And that was the primary rationale that Xi Jinping used to ensure that he could become premier for life. So he's going to want to see some form of progress, and it will be demanded of him by the party more generally, which would suggest to me at least that the timetable for getting this kind of question done is probably a lot shorter than many pundits might imagine. The reality today is that central banks are on their timetable. Investors have their own timetable, but there's a political timetable that resides outside of both, which can affect either. And that is, I think, the reality that people are beginning to understand now as they look at what is happening and what the direction of travel is with Chinese policy. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.